Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown. Today I'll be talking to the author of The Business of America is Lobbying, How Corporations Became Politicized and Politics Became More Corporate. The author of the book is Lee Drutman. The publisher is Oxford University Press. I hope that you enjoy this conversation that I had with Lee. Welcome back to the podcast. Again, I have the chance to talk today to Lee Drutman, who's the author of The Business of America is Lobbying, How Corporations Become Politicized and Politics Became More Corporate, published this year by Oxford University Press. Lee, how are you doing today?
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. I've heard about this book for a couple of years, and it's so nice to actually have it in my hands and to have read it. I hope that everybody else soon does the same. Before we get to the book, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are now, where you've been in the past.
Sure. Right now, I am a senior fellow at New America, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C., working in the political reform program here. Prior to that, I was at the Sunlight Foundation as a senior fellow for about 3 years, did a PhD in political science from UC Berkeley.
Wonderful. I sort of know some things about you and know your interest in all of these issues of lobbying and how these things are counted. There have been a lot of good books on lobbying, and a couple of them have been featured on the podcast, but your approach is different than most of them. You focus exclusively on corporate lobbying. So what is corporate? What is a corporate lobbyist, and why are they so important for us to better understand?
Well, a corporate lobbyist is a lobbyist who works for a large or any size corporation, really. But it's particularly the large corporations that have become really the dominant actors in Washington now. And roughly 80% of all lobbying expenditures are corporate lobbying expenditures, either individual corporations or associations. And so I think there's certainly been a lot of books written about lobbying, but very few have been written about corporate lobbying, which seems surprising given that so much of the lobbying in Washington is on behalf of corporations.
Now, I think most would be surprised by the fact that this is a relatively new situation. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about when things began to shift in Washington and when corporate America awoke to the potential lobbying offered them.
Sure. Well, if you went back to the 1960s, you would find actually relatively few corporations with Washington offices, and corporate lobbying was pretty sparse, reactive. Even the associations that were in Washington were not particularly active. But starting in the early 1970s, a bunch of corporate CEOs were kind of in a state of panic because suddenly government had created a bunch of new regulatory agencies, the economy was stumbling, inflation was increasingly a problem, and they really felt almost a sense of existential threat by what was happening in Washington. They formed the Business Roundtable, they rejuvenated the Chamber of Commerce, and a lot of companies hired lobbyists for the first time, and they really started paying attention to politics in the 1970s, and they started winning by the early 1980s. They had lowered their taxes, they had rolled back regulation, they had put cost-benefit analysis in the White House, and just really changed the tenor of politics in Washington.
Now, corporations aren't the only ones in the lobbying game. How does the amount that corporations spend on lobbying compare to the other big players like unions and issue groups who are also, if you walk around Washington, you see all of those groups and the buildings that they work in. So give a sense of the comparative role that corporations play.
Right. Corporations dwarf everybody else pretty much. So you might think about it. This idea of countervailing power, a pluralist ideal that goes back to James Madison, in which faction counteracts faction and all equals out in the end, which is the sort of American ideal. But when you count up the numbers and you add up all the lobbying done by unions and all the lobbying done by groups that represent diffuse publics like citizens, consumers, you compare that against all the lobbying that corporations spend, all the money that corporations spend on lobbying, you have one for every $1 that unions and public interest groups combined spend, corporations spend $34. So it's a 34-to-1 ratio. So that's not really faction counteracting faction. That's faction crowding out faction. And that ratio has been steadily increasing in 1998, which is as far back as I have good data. That ratio was 22-to-1. So it's really one-sided when it comes to the actual spending.
This would all seem to work to the benefit of corporations. I wonder if you could talk about whether you're arguing in the book that the corporations always get their way and that the corporate lobbyists always win. Is this the narrative of the way corporate lobbying works?
Well, politics is not a vending machine. It's not like you just put your big dollar bills in and get your policy outcomes. Actually, a lot of times corporations don't get what they want. Often industries fight each other, corporations fight each other. The truth is that hardly anything gets done affirmatively in Washington now, and part of that reason is that there is so much lobbying, so much competition for narrow agenda space. On the other hand, to the extent that anything is going to get done, it almost always requires a large corporation or a set of large corporations to be pushing for that to get done. And also, a lot of what happens is that the status quo is maintained, and to the extent that a lot of corporations do quite well under the status quo, all this fighting to no policy change is actually quite good for a lot of companies.
Now, one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed was your explanation of some of the differences between an in-house corporate lobbyist and a lobbyist that might be hired by a firm, and how this isn't just sort of a trivial issue. And you talk about this in a chapter about the lobbyist challenges. What are some of those challenges? And I wonder if you could talk about how corporate lobbyists deal with them, because you have this very interesting point that you make about sort of corporate lobbying begets more corporate lobbying, and there is this sort of increasing returns. Would you talk about that section of the book for us?
Sure. Well, so corporations have headquarters wherever they are headquartered, but they have lobbyists in Washington. Now, the lobbyists have an incentive in getting the corporations to continue to spend more money on lobbying. So to do that, they want to make sure that the managers appreciate the value that they are getting from having lobbyists in Washington. Now, in order to do this, lobbyists need to feedback information to the companies that emphasizes all the opportunities, all the potential threats. But this can be part of it. Is a challenge for lobbyists because often companies don't really understand how Washington works, and they want things to be done very quickly. They don't understand that there's a very slow process. They don't understand how much happens in coalitions. They don't understand. They really just don't understand politics. So it can be difficult for a corporate CEO or VP far away to really understand what this investment in lobbying is yielding for the company. So lobbyists overcome this in part by spending a lot of time educating companies, company managers about the benefits of lobbying. They also focus on narrow gains that they can get for the individual companies, whether it's a government contract or some particular tax benefit or some subsidy. So there's a strong incentive for individual lobbyists to generate very narrow benefits, which has fueled a certain particularism that is more and more the norm in corporate lobbying.
So we've been talking about this primarily in abstract terms. I wonder if we can make this a little bit more specific. Is there a story that you did some great interviews? Is there a story that a lobbyist told you that without naming names, maybe naming the description of the story that really expresses what the point is of your book? Is there something that sticks out to you that you might sort of expand on some of these big ideas that you put forward?
Sure. And I did interview a lot of lobbyists. I interviewed 60 corporate lobbyists for this book, and it's full of, I think, a lot of fascinating quotes, and I think that's one reason, if not for my writing, then to enjoy all the things that lobbyists had to say. But I think the sort of transformation, story of the growth of corporate lobbying is really the story of the transformation of lobbying from sparse and reactive to proactive, ambitious, even preemptive. So there are two, I'll share with you two quotes that I think capture this story nicely. One from a lobbyist who said, and I'm quoting here, "I think 20 years ago you had a Washington office to keep the government out of your business. And I think people have evolved to understand now that there are opportunities, partnerships with government. Private-public partnerships are good. We don't want to be sort of business versus government. That doesn't work. We try to get out in front of issues." And another quote that I particularly like that says something similar, the lobbyist said, "25 years ago," and I'm quoting here, "25 years ago, our companies were run by engineers, and it was just keep the government out of our business. We want to do what we want to do. And gradually that's changed to how can we make the government our partners? It's gone from leave us alone to let's work on this together." And if there's one line that I think summarizes the story, it's that quote, that it's gone from leave us alone to let's work on this together.
Yeah, and in interviewing this many lobbyists, what was it like to interview them? Were most of them willing to be interviewed? Were they candid? Were they introspective about the work they do? Were they critical at all about how they pursued their line of work? Tell us a little bit about those interviews and where they took place and when they took place.
Well, they took place in mostly in their offices, some over the phone. I did these interviews in 2007, 2008. So some lobbyists didn't want to talk to me, but I think a lot of lobbyists feel that they've been unfairly cast as all like Jack Abramoff, which is completely unfair. And that a lot of lobbyists really value the work that they do as professional public policy advocacy. They feel like they're the real policy experts, and in many cases they really are, and that they have an important role to play, and that the public has really maligned that role. And so I think a lot of them, or at least the ones who were willing to talk to me, were quite eager to talk about what they do, and I found them to be thoughtful, articulate, and sometimes, yes, introspective.
Yeah, I've done interviews with lobbyists myself, and I've always been struck by very similar things that, you know, it may or may not be always be true, but the sense of expertise that you get, and this is not surprising because so many of them, you know, have worked on the other side of the issue before. Could you talk a little bit about that dimension of corporate lobbying, which is the movement in and out of government? Is this a part of the story that your book has to tell?
Certainly, this is colloquially referred to as the revolving door. But usually, the door tends to go one way, which is that you work on the Hill for a while, you get some real policy expertise, you start to understand how the process works, you build up a set of contacts, and then you realize that you're not being paid very well, and you could double or triple your salary if you went to K Street. A great quote from a lobbyist that captures this nicely says, and I'm quoting here, "It's tough to live off the government paycheck. You make so little money. One of the things that's wrong with the system is that somebody finally learns to do their job, and then they have to move on. So you have a bunch of young folks who turn to lobbyists to figure out their jobs." And I think this is really an important part of the story, is that as the amount of lobbying has increased and the number of jobs have increased, more and more talent has gone out of government and into lobbying, and most of those lobbyists represent private industry. So we more and more have a situation where government, and particularly in Congress, is relying on industry to tell them how to understand public policy.
Now, you offer in your conclusion some what I thought were clever policy proposals to address some of these issues. Is there one of those proposals that you think has even a slight hope for a larger discussion, maybe passage at some point? Is there one that you say, well, this is something that, you know, actually it would work and maybe there could be some traction behind it?
Well, I do believe that simply investing in government capacity is actually something that could have bipartisan support. I think conservatives even are starting to realize that they've cut off their ability to enact policy. We spend very little on our legislative institutions when you think about how much lobbying there is. If there's $2.6 billion a year in reported corporate lobbying, but collectively the House and the Senate combined have a budget of $2 billion. We've seen actually a decrease in congressional committee staff since 1980, about a third fewer staff in key committee positions, which are really the most important policy positions. And I think I really do believe that we could have a moment in which Congress reasserts itself and says, you know, we actually have to pay people more and hire more people if we're going to be a relevant institution. And we don't want to just have to rely on lobbyists to do our job. So I think that's actually something even Paul Ryan is now asking for more money for his Ways and Means Committee. So I think that's there could be some real movement on that issue. And I think it would go a long way towards reducing the influence of lobbyists.
So this book is out, and I always like to ask people what's next from them. Is there a new project on your table? You don't have the traditional academic job. So what is going to keep you busy at New America? Is there another book that'll come?
Well, there probably will be another book. I'm exploring some ideas, but I'm really trying to think now about solutions, about trying to be realistic in what kind of reforms we might want to enact, and thinking about what are the circumstances under which government works well to enact general interest policies and not be so reliant on a narrow set of corporate lobbyists.
Lee's book, which I really enjoyed, is The Business of America is Lobbying, How Corporations Became Politicized and Politics Became More Corporate, published this year by Oxford University Press. Lee, thank you very much for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on the podcast, Heath. I'm a huge fan, and it's a real thrill to be here with you.